afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host, Alfred Addisk, and James Corbett of The Corbett Report will be here after the first segment of today's program. Today is Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. As I speak, I believe Attorney General Jeff Sessions is holding a press conference, or soon to be holding a press conference. It was supposed to begin at 4 o'clock. I will watch my news feed for any significant announcements from him, at least for the first 20 minutes of today's program. He could just be answering questions from the press, or maybe there's enough pressure on him for him to resign. Don't know. But I believe it's just scheduled to be a question and answer session with the press. But I will keep my eye on it for the next 20 minutes. And it's always interesting how they start these news sessions, all these, you know, with the news or any significant announcement at 4 o'clock, the top of the hour. And do you know why, ladies and gentlemen, little boys and girls? It's because of the Dow. It's because of the stock markets. You don't want to have any significant changes that might shake up the markets, and they might fall maybe 100 points or 150 points, heaven's sakes. But many of your announcements, that's why I love the hour of this program, 4 o'clock. We've broken a lot of news over the years because everything happens at 4 o'clock after the markets close. So I'll keep an eye on that for you. I hope he doesn't resign. I hope it is just a question and answer session because it could fuel the fire to the people who are trying to remove Trump from office. So I do hope that's not the case, and we'll just have to see what happens. But let's go ahead and get to the market report today. We have gold. We did see pressure on gold. It was down almost 20 bucks today. Recovered slightly, down 14.20, a little over 1%, $1,235. Silver got hit a little bit harder, almost 4% on the day, down 69 at 1781. Platinum was down 30 bucks at 989, and palladium was down 7 at 772. Now, I did say you're going to see ups and downs in gold, but I don't think we're going to see any real big impact to where, you know, gold breaks 1100 again. No, those days are gone. And so I think this is just a temporary blip. And again, there's a lot more discussions on if they have a rate increase at the end of the month. And, you know, if there is a rate increase, yeah, we might see some pressure on gold. But again, folks, you know, they're raising the interest rates to tame inflation, you know, the economy, to keep it from getting too overheated. I can't believe that I'm saying that the economy would be too overheated at a 1.9% GDP. But that's what we get from the Federal Reserve and from the reports from Washington. But so my point is, it doesn't matter if gold goes down $15, $20, $30, or even $50. By the end of the year, we're all going to be very, very happy with the performance of gold and silver. USDX today, of course, was stronger, 0.42 at 102.15. Crude oil took a beating today, down 1.11 at 52.72. Paper markets today, you have the Dow, and this really started to reverse itself after there was an announcement that Jeff Sessions was going to have a press conference. The Dow was down 112 points. Well, that's nothing after it was up 300 yesterday, but still 21,002.97. The NASDAQ was down 42 at 58.61, and the S&P was down 14 at 23.18. The 10-year yield, 2.49%, back up almost at over that 250 level, up another 0.03. And the euro is down significantly, 0.36 at 105. So I'll keep my screen here on for Mr. Sessions. There was just wanted to touch on this a little bit. I like Senator Rand Paul. I like him. And he's all hot under the collar, and he blasted House Republicans for keeping their Obamacare repeal and replace legislation under wraps. And it's like, what's new? Rand Paul's been told that the House Obamacare bill is under lock and key in a secure location, and not available for him or the public to view. Now, here's the senator, and he can't view the Obamacare bill. He says this is unacceptable. This is the biggest issue before Congress and the American people right now. And it was reported by Bloomberg that the replacement bill was being kept in a dedicated reading room where it will be available to members of the House Energy and Commerce Committee ahead of a markup. The move is in an effort to prevent leaks. GOP leaders say the bill will be released once it's final. Yeah, I get that they're trying to prevent leaks, but I can't imagine Rand Paul as being one of those that are doing the leaking. I don't think the leaking is coming from that area. You know, I think the leaking is probably a little bit closer inside the White House. But Paul accused House leadership of not wanting to admit to creating a watered-down version of Obamacare and demanded that they release text of the bill. There was a lot of texting. You know, he did a lot of tweeting about, you know, what he wanted. But he says that every elected official and every American deserves to know what they're trying to do. And Paul later said he'd been told the House Republicans' draft of the repeal bill is take it or leave it. I think that's why it's top secret, he said. Why don't they want us to see it? The only copy we've seen is from the media. Does that sound to you backwards? We saw a leaked copy that the media was given that we weren't given, he continued. Now we're being told that it's classified, that the hearing is like a security clearance hearing. You have to have a clearance and permission. And Paul said the bill will be made available starting today to members of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He says, I'm assuming anybody else will be turned away. So again, business as usual? I don't know. I think it's a little different, but still, in the long run, it just might be, but I hope not. Some good news. We have manufacturing in the United States expanded in February at the fastest pace since August of 2014. The Institute for Supply Management's index climbed to 57.7. the sixth straight monthly advance from 56 a month earlier. Any reading above 50 does indicate growth. So, you know, good signs. Does it really seem to fit into many of the reports that we hear? You know, this could be an oddity. Did it create more jobs? Did it create greater wages? Those are the questions we want to know. Wells Fargo, you know, they've been in trouble for a year now as they had that scandal, as accounts were being opened, bogus account scandal. And Wells Fargo is seeking to compensate customers that were burned by this scandal. And they even warned that there might be more victims as they do its internal review. But they also found some other things. Wells Fargo announced to U.S. authorities that are examining whether other firms abused its technology to violate international sanctions. Wells Fargo said it discovered overseas banks were using its software tools to help finance trade with countries and entities subject to U.S. sanctions. The Wells Fargo said, oh, we alerted the Treasury's Department Office of Foreign Assets Control and is cooperating with the Justice Department inquiry. It doesn't appear that any of the transactions flowed through accounts at the bank, it said in the filing. Of course it wouldn't appear that any of the transactions flow through the account. Don't you think you'd clean it up before you alerted the Treasury Department? I'm just saying. But so it's another scandal that they have inside, and this is a little more significant, I think, when you certainly have software to which it would you know, help finance trade with countries and entities subject to U.S. sanctions, like Iran and some of these other countries that have North Korea that has U.S. sanctions. So don't know, but I'm sure that'll develop here in the near future. Wells Fargo, for the original scandal, was fined $185 million for those 2 million retail bank accounts without customers' approval. Now, get this. They announced earlier this week, yesterday, that They're going to withhold 2016 cash bonuses from 8 senior executives. The decision will pull about $32 million in pay and equity awards from the executives. Oh, cry me a river. The big guys get a bonus reduction, but none of the big guys get replaced or go to jail. Only the little guys got canned. And I guess it's just the way of the world anymore. But the big guys get a little penalty, you know, that they made millions and millions off already, but they only have to pay a little bit back. You know, we talk about technology and robots and restaurants and serving you and kiosks that are going to be replacing more and more folks at the fast food restaurants and so forth. McDonald's, they made the announcement that later this year they're going to give U.S. customers the opportunity to order and pay via their cell phones as it fights to win back customers lost to other fast food rivals. McDonald's will make so-called mobile order and pay available at all of its roughly 14,000 U.S. restaurants. This was announced during their company meeting in Chicago yesterday. They're sitting in a multi-year turnaround effort. They're shifting its multi-year turnaround effort to convenience and value to woo back lapsed diners. Wouldn't you think you just improve the food? I mean, that's the best way to lure back, I think, anyone. If you're in the business restaurant, you're either service, you have to improve your service, and you have to improve your food. Kiosk, I mean, you go in, you hit a couple pictures, you don't even have to read anymore, you just hit the pretty pictures of the hamburgers. Sometimes the pictures of the hamburgers certainly look better than the food that you get from you know, from the cooks. So again, they're trying to modernize about 650 outlets under what it's called the Experience of the Future plan. So, you know, eliminate people, eliminate that personal contact, eliminate pretty much everything that people can do it on their own, and it only makes their pocketbooks grow even larger. Venezuela, they're still having problems. They're down to their, what, $10 billion? But $7 billion of that, of the 10 of those reserves are in gold. And we know that Venezuela did have to ship some gold to Switzerland in the past year to make some debt payments, but they have another big debt payment coming up closer to the end of the year, and they're not quite sure. I think that payment also is around $7 billion, so they might pay it in gold. That's what they have left in their reserves. Maybe they'll use half of it, but maybe with the increase of oil that we've seen of late, if it stays up there above 50, that might help Venezuela a little bit, but not so sure it will keep them from having to sell any more gold. They don't want to default. You know, they've got three refineries in Houston. They're a big oil. The U.S. is their biggest customer for oil. And I'm sure it didn't hurt either when we start producing our own oil. I'm sure our imports from them dropped in addition to helping with the price of oil dropping as we increase our production. So I'm not sure what's going to come. They're trying to. They should have been put in that position to begin with, because it's the people that are being hurt by their massive food shortages and medical shortages, and along with the rising in prices. So again, folks, citizen, you guys, we get the last of the deal. We're the ones that get penalized for government's bad decisions. And some of their decisions might sound really good when they begin with them, but in the long run, if they go off course and they, if you believe you can get something for nothing, well, this is the position that you'll be in. You'll be Argentina, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, and that's just a handful that I can mention right now. There's many, many more, and probably many more to come. With the big question of the United States. Does it seem like there's any big announcements yet coming from Jeff Sessions? So maybe it is just a question and answer session going on. I hope so. I hope that's all there is. But I really don't see much coming out of that report as yet. I did want to talk, and I know I'm running out of time. I've got 3 minutes left. We have Mint State 63 $20 gold pieces. Mint State 63 $20 St. Gaudens $20 gold pieces. They're running $1,320 today. It's a tremendous buy. You're looking $30. Oh, I'm sorry, $20. About $20-$25 more than what a gold bullion coin would cost. I mean, those spreads. Come on, folks. 1-800-375-4188. Now's the time. If you don't have $20 gold pieces in your portfolio, why wouldn't you get them now? They offer you protection, performance, privacy. I mean, they're a great coin to have in your portfolio. That's 1-800-375-4188. Mint State 63 St. Gaudens for $1,320. I did want to talk about, there's a great article in Forbes, and I'll have a link in the newsletter this weekend. You can go to dgscoins.com, sign up. And for 15 years, I've said global currencies are going to be backed by gold. Gold will be the biggest player in global trade. Global trade is not going away. The global elite might be dismissed and banished, but globalization is here to stay. But it is changing. It is being modernized. The only way possible to continue with fair trade is to remove the reserve status of the dollar and place gold into basket of currencies, world basket of currencies, to stabilize the exchange. You can back the dollar by gold, but I'm not sure trading partners will accept another world reserve currency, even though it's backed by gold. So I think they might move more towards a basket of currencies. So the big question is, I'm not sure, and all countries, I'm not sure, I don't see all major world currencies backed by gold, maybe a handful, depending on, you know, maybe somehow depending on a percentage of GDP from each country. I mean, and that was how the IMF was originally set up. And I am going to talk more about this report tomorrow, briefly anyway, because I do encourage you to read the whole article. And it's the encouragement from for Mr. Trump. We know Mr. Trump likes gold. He understands gold, and I think he needs to fix our monetary policy in order to make America great again. I think he can do it. This article is from Forbes, so there's more people. If we can just hold the music a little bit, I think there is more people that is confirming this, that our monetary policy has to be fixed, and we do need to bring back gold and silver into our monetary policy. We do need to get back to basics, so to speak. And I have a lot more on this. We'll go over it tomorrow. I want to thank Todd for just pulling back that music a little bit. And make sure you tune in tomorrow to listen. And you will hear Alfred and James Corbett when we get back from break.
And stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Our guest is James Corbett, calling in from Japan. We have James on the program every couple of weeks, so we always look forward to it. He is, you can find James at The Corbett Report, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. One of the best sources of podcasts, articles, videos on geopolitics to be found on the internet. Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
All right. We talked to you. You almost said you can't complain there, did you?
That was my ready-made response, but yeah, I will bite my tongue.
We did that already during the break while we were waiting to start on the program. We're going to ask James what's happening in Japan relative to Fukushima, because we have heard reports here in the last week that something extraordinary has happened. The core may have disappeared. It's down someplace in the ground, and I don't know. They don't have the China syndrome in Japan. Do they have the? Where does it go if it falls all the way through the? All does it wind up?
I think
Europe
it would be Brazil,
or?
Maybe.
Brazil,
like that.
All right,
yeah. Something around there.
So what's happening?
Okay, so it is important to understand that so the way that this has been reported has been, I think, part of the problem, or at least has definitely shown a lack of thinking through what is happening right now. So the best report that I could direct people to at least start to understand what some of these newer reports are about, is from a website called Simply Info. It's at fukuleaks.org. And they have a report from last month that's called No, Fukushima Daiichi Did Not See a Radiation Spike, that is talking about the way that, for example, The Guardian reported that Fukushima nuclear reactor radiation at highest level since 2011 meltdown, which is really not, strictly speaking, accurate. What is accurate is to say that the readings that the TEPCO has been able to get from the reactor are the highest readings they have seen since 2011, but it is not a radiation spike. So to be accurate in what we're talking about, the quote from the Japan Times is, "The radiation level in the containment vessel of Reactor 2 at the crippled Fukushima No. 1 power plant has reached a maximum of 530 sieverts per hour, the highest since the triple core meltdown in March 2011, TEPCO said, Tokyo Electric Power Co., which owns and operates the plant, or at least did until it was nationalized. TEPCO said on Thursday that the blazing radiation reading was taken near the entrance to the space just below the pressure vessel, which contains the reactor core. The high figure indicates that some of the melted fuel that escaped the pressure vessel is nearby." So what is really being said in this report is that they have really managed to get closer to the core than they have up until this point. It's not that this is some spike or some new radiation. This is just they've never been able to get this close to the actual core itself to take readings like that. And as this Simply Info website points out, back in 2012, they did a calculation of the radiation levels that should be in that pedestal area where the core is around. We don't know exactly where it is lying, but somewhere in that area. And they were estimating that it would be 5 gigasieverts per hour in 2012, i.e. 10 times the 530 sieverts per hour that was being estimated there. And this is an estimate. That 530 sieverts per hour that they're measuring inside Reactor 2 is an estimate from radiation effects on the camera itself that was being used to explore the reactor. So what they're doing is they're taking a look at the spots on the camera, and they're using that to estimate the actual radioactivity, and that estimate comes with a 30% plus or minus variability. So it could be up in the 600 sieverts per hour, could be down to 400. Still, it's an extremely, obviously extremely radioactive. It would kill people within a matter of minutes if they were exposed to it, but that is exactly what we would expect to find around the actual core of the reactor itself, which again, we do know is somewhere in that area. We do not know exactly where it's lying. This is the closest they've ever gotten to it. So as a follow-up to that, TEPCO sent in a Scorpion robot that is heavily reinforced and supposed to be able to withstand something like 1,000 sieverts per hour for 2 hours or something along those lines. I can't remember the exact details, the exact specifications. They sent it in, and it died, obviously, when they started to approach wherever the reactor is lying. So that was reported as a failure, but it did actually get some real data out before it died, and the reading that it was putting out on its onboard radiation sensor was 210 sieverts per hour, which, again, is about half of what they were estimating from that earlier camera estimate that they made. So, again, what this really indicates is they're getting closer to the actual core itself, and again, this is exactly, I mean, we would expect the cores are obviously extremely radioactive. So they are just basically getting closer to actually detecting that. It's not that this is new, per se. It's not that this is a spike in radiation. It's just that they are actually approaching the cores, perhaps for the first time.
Some of the reports I've seen, they certainly didn't report it the way I'm understanding it from you. It was allegedly a spike, and oh my gosh, the world is coming to an end, and so on, and it's reassuring to find out that maybe that's not the case. How much radiation do you think is actually reaching the west coast of the United States and South America and Canada and so on?
Well, we can only go by the actual readings that people are getting, and as people saw, there was a story late last year, I believe it was, where they were getting detectable, discernible traces of Fukushima on the west coast of the United States. It was, I believe, cesium-134 that they were using as the fingerprint of Fukushima. The only possible source of cesium-134, I believe that was the right isotope of cesium. I have to relook that up. But the only possible source of that would have been Fukushima because it has a relatively short half-life. This isn't from, you know, atomic nuclear testing 50 years ago or anything of that sort. It is from Fukushima. It was detectable and was detected, I believe late last year was when we started seeing those definitive results. But the amounts that were being detected, again, were trace amounts that would be extremely difficult to even detect, let alone to detect the effects of. And this is where you get into the debate about, I mean, is there any acceptable amount of radiation whatsoever that will not affect the human body? And the answer, scientifically speaking, as has been the scientific consensus for some time now, even by the international panels that are set up and heavily invested in, or heavily tied to the nuclear industries that have an obvious investment in covering this sort of thing up. But the real scientific consensus is that there is no safe levels of radiation. Even tiny microscopic amounts do have an effect on causing cancer, for example. But having said that, what we're seeing or what has been detected is not the kind of thing that's going to cause millions of people to die or anything of that sort, at least not yet. And to be fair, until such time as the cores actually get into the groundwater in Japan or some really game-changing event takes place, one would not expect that. Again, the highest levels of radioactivity that have been found and the deadly, instantly deadly levels of radioactivity are inside the reactor vessels themselves. So the pressure vessel, anyway, of the reactors. So it is, again, everyone has to make their own determinations and what is acceptable to them. There is detectable amounts of Fukushima radiation that has reached the west coast of the United States. And again, I think people have to take into their own, use their own calculus to decide what that means for them. But I do not think this is, you know, dead death of the oceans as we know it, as is sometimes portrayed in the clickbait media.
We see reports of whales washing up on the shore, dolphins, fish, whatever. Allegedly, the fauna is, I don't even know if it's fauna only on the earth, or is it also, we find fauna in the oceans as well as on the earth, meaning animals, or do you know the definition?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I think fauna is probably only on the land, but I don't know for sure. But nevertheless, question is, the reports that we've heard that the ocean is having serious problems. You're suggesting they're exaggerated and perhaps inaccurate.
Well, let's look at a specific example, and I think that's the only way we can or should be doing this, is looking at specific examples or specific assertions that this is because of this, because correlation, of course, does not equal causation. So just because something has happened in a similar time frame does not mean that it is because of this other thing that happened in a similar time frame. So we have to evaluate each claim on its own merits. And one that I go back to is a story that broke back in 2013. There was a mass starfish die-off in the Pacific, in British Columbia. And at the time, there was a lot of people that were quick to say, this is Fukushima, this is the effects of Fukushima. It was subsequently diagnosed as starfish wasting syndrome, which there are a number of different reasons why it would not be directly tied to Fukushima. But perhaps the most important one is that the first report on this was released in 2009, and their data was collected in 2008, which, of course, is 3 years before Fukushima melted down. So, again, I think people are very quick to take any specific event and say it's Fukushima without actually seeing the causation or demonstrating that causational factor. I'm not saying that that cannot be the case. I'm not saying that it is not the case. But I think for each and every claim, we actually have to look at the causal mechanism and what's happening rather than just jumping to conclusions, especially because it's, I think, part of that phenomenon where because people are looking for something like mass die-off events, oh, okay, now every mass die-off event becomes a big headline story because you can now tie it to Fukushima because correlation is causation. So I think it's one of those things. You'll tend to see that, I think, popping up in news stories and cycles where you remember a couple of years ago there was the mass banker die-off where yep, there were the bankers yep that were committing suicide and ending up dead in various ways. And, of course, people were very quick at the time to say, oh, this is clearly, you know, there's something going on and they're being killed or whatever. And, again, maybe that was the case, but there was really no way to show that. And it was, I think, again, the case every time a banker dies, suddenly it became big headline news because, oh, another banker died. And again, when the media picks up on a meme like that, I think they help to propagate the conception of that by reporting on each individual case, where in other time periods, like right now, if a banker died tomorrow, it would not necessarily be headline news because no one's concentrating on that story.
Does this mean I can cancel my reservation to fly to Mars with Elon Musk? The world is going to last a little longer?
Well, I wouldn't cancel the reservation, but maybe you don't have to go because you're afraid of the ocean die-off. I'm not definitively saying anything here. Hey, I mean, look, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not speaking from any scientific authority, surely. But having said that, again, I think people need to put in the research before they start panicking about these things, because there is a clear and obvious benefit for certain sectors of the media, including the independent media, to gain a lot of attention and clicks and excitement by
sky is falling.
Yeah, sky is falling. Exactly.
There's the Chicken Little. He's the mascot of the fake news, I think. Sky is falling, so you better read this publication. I'm encouraged a little bit by what we see in Chernobyl, a little bit I know about it. I've seen reports on it. I've watched it from time to time. Chernobyl, terrible radiation problem, and yet it's not absolutely, it didn't wipe out all life close by. There are allegedly wolves and I don't know what other animals are apparently doing well, although maybe more mutations than usual, but Chernobyl suggests to me that radiation may not be as dangerous as a lot of people suppose. Do you think that's unwise for me to think that, or do you think that may be true?
Well, certainly the most dire predictions about Chernobyl and the Chernobyl area have proven not to be the case. And as you say, let's put it this way. I certainly don't cite National Geographic as the source of information, but as they say in the subhead to an article that they had about Chernobyl 30 years later, they said, it's not certain how radiation is affecting wildlife, but it is clear that animals abound. And I think that is the point. There is an active wildlife population, moose, deer, beaver, and other exotic animals that live in the Chernobyl area, which is certainly not what was being predicted by the most doomsayers of the crowd in the wake of the Chernobyl disaster. And I live just a short Shinkansen ride, a short bullet train ride from Hiroshima, where at that time there was very big questions about whether anything would ever grow again in that area because of the nuclear blasts and all of that. Uh-huh. And you know, if you go there today, other than the Peace Memorial Park, where they preserve that particular building, I can't remember what it's called. This is the bank building, and it's got the dome, and it's blown out, and they've preserved it in the state that it was in. But other than that, you would not know that Hiroshima had ever been bombed. It's a thriving, bustling city with plant life and everything, and animals and what have you. So I think the biggest doomsday scenario purveyors have been wrong. I wouldn't say that necessarily means everything is peachy keen, but it certainly should give us pause for thought about these types of disaster stories, which, again, there are people who profit from just by being the Chicken Littles. But there's a potentially much bigger story here, which is the demonization of the nuclear industry itself by potentially the very economic interests that are most hurt by it, i.e. the natural gas and oil and other interests that have been known to be behind some of these groups that are the biggest voices against nuclear energy. And I don't certainly vouch for this or anything, but you can watch on YouTube. I can't remember the name. It would very much help if I could remember the name. But there is a researcher who gave a talk about nuclear power a couple of decades ago, and he was talking about how it's been blown out of proportion on purpose by the fossil fuel industry to make fossil fuels seem like the only possible alternative. And he was eating radioactive materials in the lecture to show, you know, it's not what people claim it to be. Again, I'm not vouching for this as dogma, but I am saying that there are other reasons why the nuclear energy industry has been so vilified, potentially.
Yeah, one more for you. We've got about a little more than 30 seconds left, but you mentioned that the Fukushima plant has been nationalized. Does that mean the taxpayers are on the hook for the repairs as opposed to TEPCO?
TEPCO was bought out to the extent that the Japanese government became the largest single shareholder of the company. Now, this doesn't mean that the Japanese government technically owns the power plant itself. It's just that they are the largest shareholder in TEPCO, and that was a few years ago. I don't actually know if they've divested themselves of that or what have you, but certainly the Japanese public are on the hook for the effects of Fukushima, and they've since revised into the, I can't remember the exact figure, but it's going to be tens of billions of dollars now committed to the cleanup.
That's the way it always is, isn't it? The taxpayers always get to pay. They don't necessarily get the benefits, but they definitely get the bills. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. I'll be back with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with our guest, James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. We're going to talk a little about Bitcoin, and I don't own any Bitcoin, but James does, so he is certainly more knowledgeable about the subject than I am. I have a couple of headlines here where one of them complains that observes that Bitcoin is extremely volatile. All right. There's another one that says there's a worldwide phenomena where bankers hate Bitcoin, but they're still curious about blockchain. And let's talk about that just to begin. How is Bitcoin a good investment right now, or is it more of a speculation and a gamble?
It is definitely a speculation and a gamble. Because there is absolutely no guarantee with it in any sense, and I would definitely echo those sentiments that Bitcoin is nothing if not volatile. You can see dramatic rises and falls in very short periods of time, sometimes $100 in a single day, up or down, and certainly over the last 6 months we've seen an incredible rise from $400 per Bitcoin to edging over $1,200 as we speak. So there has been an incredible degree of volatility, and it is not always apparent to me exactly what accounts for the volatility on any given day. It doesn't seem to be driven by news per se. There seems to be mysterious forces behind it. And I think part of that is because it is still a relatively small market. The market cap of Bitcoin is still under $20 billion, which is not insignificant, but it is on the global scheme of international currencies. It's absolutely minuscule. So it certainly can and is dominated, I'm sure, by some very large players who are able to influence things up or down with large transactions.
It can be manipulated without too much trouble, is what you're saying on this, just because the money is the total capitalization is so small that a big player can come in and make it go up or make it go down, and perhaps profit significantly by that manipulation.
That is correct, and in fact, we do know that whoever or whatever created Bitcoin that went by the name Satoshi Nakamoto, and no one knows who or what that is, or whether it was a single person or a group of people or what have you, but we do know that they have a significant holding. I don't know what that is estimated at in today's price of Bitcoin, but it was certainly in the millions, tens of millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin is sitting there being held. And Bitcoin being Bitcoin, with the blockchain ledger being an open source distributed ledger that is viewable by anyone, and all transactions on the blockchain are viewable, people know that these accounts are associated with that Satoshi Nakamoto, and the Bitcoin isn't being spent. You can check that. It is sitting there. But that's one example of someone who has a significant amount of Bitcoin that could make it a significant move. But then again, as I say, the blockchain being what it is and everyone being able to observe the transactions, if Satoshi Nakamoto started buying or spending Bitcoin from that address, he would be able to see it and observe it. And that would be a significant move because everyone wants to know. It's just the human interest story of it, if nothing else. You know, who is this person who invented this? It's still not something that is public knowledge.
It's kind of like Henry Ford in terms of something as revolutionary as the assembly line. Certainly going to make hard to know where this is going to go, but there's no getting around that the wave, there is a wave here, and I'm sure a lot of people in the audience are wondering, can you surf this wave? And if so, which, you know, where's it safe to surf? And when is it too late?
I think you're right to point out, I mean, it is actually a technological advance that is much more important than a lot of people realize, I think, in the sense of the problems that it solves, problems that have been around for quite a long time that were solved quite elegantly. And I'll have to take people's word of this, because I'm not a mathematician. So I can, I mean, I can look at the original Bitcoin white paper and kind of understand the general concepts, but I'm not familiar with the crypto mathematics behind it all. But it is a genuine question that people have thought about for some time. How can you have a distributed open source ledger that has no central authority? There is no central trust or verification. It's a trustless system, and yet it is able to function without that central authority. How can you do that when there are different people in different parts of the globe that are sending Bitcoin back and forth? How do you get across, for example, the double spend problem? Because in any centralized system, if somebody makes a transaction out of one account, then that a central authority can stamp that and say, okay, that there it is, there's the approval, and now that account has less money, and then there's another transaction that comes in from that same account. Okay, no, there's not enough money to pay for that from that account, so I deny it. But when it's distributed like this, you could theoretically have the problem of a double spend, where someone spends their Bitcoin from their account and spends it again, but since there's no central authority that's verifying it, that could be processed before it's found out to be a double spend from that account. How do you get across that? And it has to do with the way that the network functions and all of this and the crypto mathematics behind it. It's an incredibly detailed and sort of elegant way to solve those types of problems. And as such, it is revolutionary in a number of senses. And as such, it's also important to remember that the blockchain idea and that distributed ledger that underlies the Bitcoin network is itself a different idea than Bitcoin. Blockchain does not equal Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just one network that can be constructed on a blockchain technology, which is exactly what the governments and the central banks are now looking at, and private corporations and big banks are now looking at. They're all looking at this blockchain idea. Oh, here's this elegant distributed ledger that we can use. We can create our own kind of private blockchain, private Bitcoin, if you will, not Bitcoin, but a private version of that, that we use to transact amongst ourselves because it's instantaneous and there's no fees involved. It's not that big infrastructure that's been set up for transactions around the world. We can take advantage of that. And I'm going to guess they're not going to pass those savings on to customers, and it's not going to benefit anyone except the big banks, the central banks, the big players that are looking at capitalizing on this technology. The other side of that is, like anything else, they want to suppress the competition. And that means, in this case, suppress Bitcoin. And that's why we see the regulations coming in all around the world. Japan is about to pass some new regulations for Bitcoin this April. In fact, they have passed them. It's just they're going to kick into effect in April. The Philippines Central Bank just issued a circular with a raft of new regulatory requirements for exchanges. The Australian Digital Currency and Commerce Association has come up with their own self-regulatory code of conduct to kind of, you know, preempt the Australian government, which is obviously going to crack down at some point. So they're, no, we'll crack down on ourselves. It's okay. And of course, China, I think most famously, has been in the last couple of months coming through with a lot of what's been rumored for a while, which is a general crackdown on Bitcoin. The three largest Bitcoin exchanges in China have all voluntarily suspended withdrawals for a month in order to upgrade their equipment to comply with new anti-money laundering efforts by the Chinese government. And then nine other exchanges have admitted to having behind closed doors talks with the People Bank of China, where they were discussed risk and problems in the Bitcoin market, i.e. the People's Bank of China said, continue doing what you're doing and we'll kill you. So I think definitely the Bitcoin clampdown is happening in China. And lo and behold, simultaneously, the People's Bank of China is announcing that they've done successful completions on their own private blockchain that they've constructed, where they're starting to basically lay the framework for what they are now promising is going to be a digital version of the yuan, a completely government-controlled digital currency that they're going to be starting to roll out sometime in the future. They don't say when, months, years, maybe decades, but at any rate, they are working on it right now. And I think it's two sides of the coin. They've got a crackdown on Bitcoin, and then they're building up their own version of that private a private infrastructure behind closed doors.
I have no doubt that the New World Order, one world government, the whole idea is ultimately based on a single global currency. They are emulating Baron Rothschild's observation where he said, I don't care who makes the laws as long as I can control the money. And I think the governments of the world understand the truth of that statement, a profound truth. We can, a lot of people look at that and just, oh, that was, isn't that interesting? No, it's not interesting. It's way beyond that. If you can control the money, you really can control the world. And if you intend to control the world, you've got to control the money. Is it possible that a privatized entity like Bitcoin could actually threaten the global banking system by creating a viable alternative to the currency issued by central banks? Is that possible, or is that just, again, maybe are they going to, can they expect to have their lives threatened before this is, before it gets to that point?
Yeah. Well, I guess that depends how we parse the word possible, because is it possible theoretically, or is it possible politically? And I think that it's being demonstrated right now that it is not possible politically, because of course governments like China and Japan and the Philippines and Australia and the U.S. and everywhere else are starting to pass their laws to clamp down on Bitcoin in various ways. And to be fair, I should stress that it's impossible really to stop the idea of Bitcoin. As long as people can trade strings of numbers and letters on the internet, Bitcoin will survive. In fact, you don't even need the internet for it. You could run the Bitcoin network on paper. It would be very cumbersome. It would involve mailing things back and forth to people, but the concept would be the same, and it would still be possible. So that, I don't think it's really possible for a government to suppress it, but they clamp down on those points that interface with that fiat currency system. So the exchanges where you go and you take your U.S. dollars and you buy Bitcoin, or you take your Bitcoin and sell them for U.S. dollars, the exchanges is where the clampdown happens. And of course, exchanges are now beholden to all the money laundering rules and know your customer and everything else, so you have to verify yourself six ways from Sunday and give your blood and pledge your children and all of that and whatever else they make you do to get signed up for those. So I think that's where the clampdown is coming.
What about the Bitcoin without, I mean, I know that some entities, retail markets and whatever, and they're selling their products for Bitcoins, which implies that there's no need to change your Bitcoin into dollars in order to purchase something. I don't doubt most things you want, you need dollars to purchase them, at least here in the United States. Bitcoin is only a small, competitor, but even if they close down the point where you can change Bitcoin into dollars, what about the point where you can change Bitcoin into a new automobile?
Exactly right. Yes, again.
Now what? Can they control that? Can that be stopped?
It's in a lot of ways analogous to the problems, quote unquote, with cash, i.e. problems from the perspective of controllers. If you want to go out and give someone a bundle of paper for, this car or whatever it is, the government doesn't necessarily have a way to see that transaction, and it can be done under the table. Now, obviously, most businesses are operating in a way that, there will be a paper trail and receipts and all of that, and it'll be done above board because there are so many regulations, and it would be illegal to do it without the proper, payment of the pound of the flesh to the taxpayer and all of the tax collector and all of that. But having said that, it is certainly possible that, and it is happening, that people transact in Bitcoin rather than going through an exchange. There are other ways, for example, even if you do want to exchange dollars for Bitcoin or vice versa, there's sites like Local Bitcoins where you can arrange to meet up with someone in person, face-to-face, if you want to, and you send them Bitcoin and they'll hand you some cash. And again, obviously, there have been people who have been arrested for doing things like that because, the government needs their pound of flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to, and that's money laundering or whatever, but it does go on. And so I think it's a similar thing. Major retailers that accept Bitcoin will do so in a way that, again, there's a paper trail and the tax gets paid and all of that, but there will always be those cracks in the system. And speaking of cracks, there's something called Open Bazaar, which is a kind of Silk Road. Maybe you heard of Silk Road?
I have. In fact, I looked at Open Bazaar just in the last week or so.
Interesting.
And it just began to go across my radar, and I took a look at it and go ahead and describe it.
It's a peer-to-peer exchange system that, again, there's no central point, so it cannot be shut down. It's just, it exists as, on the internet, and people connect peer-to-peer. So you can, as you can sign up and you can sell anything. I don't think you have to sign up. In fact, you just sell something via that network, and someone else can buy it, and you can exchange in whatever you want, including Bitcoin or whatever else. And if you use all of the privacy protection and blah, 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 and seven proxies and Tor network and whatever else, at least theoretically, you can do all of that anonymously. So it, and again, there's no way to shut down OpenBazaar itself because there's no central point to shut down. That's, I mean, that's the future of the black market, the gray market, the market that the government can't necessarily regulate or control. Again, they'll have to work on de-anonymizing people and finding out who they are and punishing them for not, you know, you didn't pay your taxes.
They'll make a real example.
Exactly.
Of the ones they catch, the first ones they catch, they're going to be brutalized.
Exactly.
You're going to do something trivial.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're going to make it clear. Don't let us catch any of the rest of you doing this because we'll destroy your lives.
Exactly.
They are bound and determined to protect the existing monetary system. And this whole technology threatens it deeply. And you have to wonder, I don't know, can the banking system survive this? Can they really stop this? We've only got about 15 seconds left. But can they control this, or is this an idea whose time has come and is too powerful to be resisted for long?
If people want it, it's already here. The bankers, the middlemen have been eliminated, technologically speaking. It's just a question of pushing that through to its conclusion and whether people have the political will to do so.
All right, James, thanks very much for being on the program. Thanks for your insight and your comments. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you and me and Melody, James, and Todd, the our producer. Good night.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams.